I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for True Crime News. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From KNX News 97.1 FM,
this is Countdown 2024.
Here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
Well, the countdown continues. 45 days till Donald Trump is back in the White House. On today's Countdown 2024, President-elect Trump has promised mass deportations of undocumented immigrants once he gets back into the White House. But how realistic is this? And how will this impact certain immigrants protected by a special program? While Trump talks tough, the action might not be as strong as he says. We'll get into the realities of the situation. We'll talk to a person who could be sent to a country she doesn't really know. And now this.
Speaking of immigration, President-elect Trump says he'll nominate Caleb Vitello as acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the agency responsible for enforcing immigration laws. Vitello is a career ICE official with more than 23 years in the agency. Trump is also picking former Border Patrol Chief Rodney Scott to head the Customs and Border Protection Agency.
President-elect Trump is offering a public show of support for Pete Hegseth. That's his choice, of course, to be defense secretary. Hegseth's ability to win confirmation by the Senate is in trouble as he faces questions over allegations of excessive drinking, sexual assault, and his views on women in combat. Trump posted on social media that Hegseth is a winner and there is nothing, he says, that can be done to change that. That's a quote. Hegseth spent much of the week on Capitol Hill trying to salvage his cabinet nomination and to reassure Republican senators that he is fit to lead the Pentagon.
Elon Musk is investing a lot into President-elect Trump. New campaign finance reports show Musk spent at least $250 million to help propel Trump back to the White House. He donated most of that to America PAC, which is Musk's super PAC that backed Trump's bid. Musk has been a frequent guest at Mar-a-Lago, joining Trump's calls with world leaders and at times weighing in on the President-elect's choices of nominees and appointees.
President-elect Trump sounds serious about plans to deport tens of thousands, maybe even millions, of undocumented immigrants. But it won't be as easy as some people might think, including him. With us now is former federal immigration judge Dana Lee Marks. She was the longtime president of the National Association of Immigration Judges, widely considered a top legal mind on immigration matters. Also with us is Aureli Hernandez from the Coalition for Humane Immigration Rights of Los Angeles. She's a so-called dreamer in the DACA program. Now, that's a program that allows some undocumented immigrants to stay and work in the United States if they were brought here as kids. Hernandez is originally from Mexico, but was reunited with her parents in the U.S. when she was just 4 years old. Both of you, thanks for being with us. Aureli, let me start with you. How concerned are you? What level of anxiety do you have as Donald Trump is about to regain the White House as president?
Thank you so much for having me on today. Let me tell you that across our community, not only folks like me who have DACA, but also those who have TPS, and also the community who is unprotected, is very much anxious that he is back in office. When he was in office in 2016, the first day that he was in office, we saw him sign executive orders that put our lives in the U.S. at risk. And really, a lot of folks talk about what could happen. But what we also need to talk about is the fact that there are undocumented families in the U.S. is a result of inaction on immigration. It's been nearly 40 years since there was an ability to apply for legalization, to apply for a green card. And many families have remained in the U.S. waiting for that, my family included. And so when folks ask why there are so many immigrants who are undocumented, we have to look back at the inaction that has happened. And that brings us to this moment now where there are families who continue to live without documented status. I grew up here in California. I have lived through Prop 187. And we have seen that there has been inaction on immigration in the federal government. And that brings us to this moment where so many families fear for themselves and the ability for them to remain united. And so that's a lot of the work that we do at CHERLA, trying to assure that folks protect themselves.
All right. And that brings me to this question specifically for you, Areli. What are you doing for you?
So one of the first things I did was I looked for my card because I have DACA. There is a card that I'm issued. I have to renew my DACA, which stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. This is a work permit that also is my protection from deportation. And this is a physical card that I get in the mail, and I know where it is, and I carry it with me everywhere I go. And, you know, I will be honest with you. One of the things I'm constantly doing is looking over my shoulder. I don't know who is behind me and who is looking for me, because we've seen in the past that operations happen when folks are driving, where folks are living their daily lives. And though I'm protected, I have a card that says that I will not be deported. I still carry the fear of deportation, but I am not shied away from still continuing to speak out about the fact that we need to change this. People should not live this way.
So I want to bring Judge Marks into this conversation. You just heard what Areli was talking about and kind of her thoughts and her fears looking over her shoulder. Donald Trump has said on day one he will launch the largest deportation program in American history. That's what he's been saying. Judge, you were on the bench for decades as an immigration judge. And so from that perspective, realistically, what does the president-elect's plan look like? I mean, you can't just round up people and send them away, right?
His plan, and thank you for having me, the plan sounds completely unrealistic to every expert I've ever heard from in the immigration law field. The majority of people who have lived in the United States in an undocumented manner have been here for more than a decade. There are estimates by think tanks that there's over 80% of them. And nearly one in 10 United States citizen children are living in a home with at least one undocumented individual. There are many barriers to President Trump's plan to try to deport millions. There are resource problems. There is legal bars that exist to many of the plans he has suggested. He's going to need the cooperation of state governments, and many of them have indicated they won't do that. You cannot deport someone to another country, to their home country, unless that country is cooperating. And currently, there are at least five countries who are on record that will not accept individuals back. And the United States Constitution guarantees due process to all persons. That includes individuals who are documented or not documented. There is at least a five-year backlog at the United States immigration courts to provide that due process to individuals, and a backlog of approximately 3,700,000 cases pending before that court.
But then let me ask you this, Judge: if it is that unrealistic, what President-elect Trump says he wants to do, then is the fear among undocumented immigrants exaggerated then?
In some ways, yes, and in other ways, no. I do believe that in the short term, there's going to be a tremendous amount of chaos. There's going to be efforts by the new administration to try to take people into custody and to try to remove them. There will be legal challenges that will last for years, perhaps even beyond the Trump administration, which will prevent that because our law often requires that the status quo be maintained during a lengthy litigation. And the status quo for these individuals is, for example, DACA holders. They have legal status at the present time, depending on when the expiration of their individual authorization is. And for temporary protected status holders, they also have legal status until a pronouncement is made at least 60 days before their status expires, revoking that status. So nothing will happen quickly, but it's understandable that people are very, very concerned.
Didn't mean to interrupt you, Judge. Aureli, what did it mean to you when you were able to apply for DACA?
So let me give you a little bit of background that DACA is actually a program that happened because in 2010, there was a vote on the DREAM Act in Congress that did not pass. We have been advocating for us to be as immigrants to be allowed to apply for legalization for many decades. I got involved in the movement for immigrant rights when I was in college in 2006. And at that time, there was a Sensenbrenner bill. Folks might remember that there was this mass outpour of people on the streets of LA. It was called the Great March, La Gran Marcha. And folks were out there marching for their rights because at the time, Representative Sensenbrenner was trying to criminalize anybody who lived with immigrants, who was, you know, in communities with immigrants who supported them in many different ways. And that was a little bit of when I got involved. So this has been a long time coming of advocacy. So in 2010, we were one of the efforts was a request for folks like me who came to the country when we were young, who grew up here, who went to college, who graduated from high school, who were working, that we be allowed to apply to legalize our status. And that was called the DREAM Act. It was in 2010 under the Obama administration, and sadly, it failed. So after that, we began to ask the administration to find a way to bring about something to give us the right to work or to protect us. And that's how DACA happened. When it first was announced that June morning in 2012, I could not believe it. I eventually applied. Uh-huh.
I just want to break in and say a lot of people don't realize that to be eligible for DACA, you had to also be in the United States prior to June of 2007. So anytime someone hears about a DACA recipient or a dreamer, realize that they've been here for a decade and a half at this point or more.
Judge, are you confident that judges, your previous colleagues, will be a barrier to any plans that Trump might try to execute?
The immigration judge system is an administrative court under the Department of Justice. So immigration judges would not have the authority to challenge a law or a regulation that is passed. That has to go to the federal district courts, the circuit courts of appeal, and then ultimately to the U.S. Supreme Court. And that's part of where the confusion and frankly the unfairness occurs, because depending on where someone's place is in the line of coming before an immigration judge, they may be ruled removable from the United States, deportable from the United States, in something that another higher court may change a few months later.
You know, I wonder, are there going to be enough immigration judges to handle, if he does follow through with this idea of mass deportation, are there going to be enough judges to handle cases that come before them? Because back in 2018, there was like a mass exodus, right? When then Attorney General Jeff Sessions placed these restrictions on asylum cases. I mean, do you see another mass exodus coming?
I wouldn't characterize the 2018 exodus as a mass exodus, although there were several judges that left. It's difficult to know and predict whether people will leave or not. It's a very personal decision when you're a civil servant and expect to have a career position for your lifetime with no political overtones. That said, there are absolutely not sufficient immigration judges. There's not sufficient personnel in any of the components of the Department of Homeland Security that deal with immigration enforcement or the courts to handle this kind of volume. As I said, there's a backlog of 3.7 million cases before this program even begins.
Right. We're talking, by the way. Wait, hold on one second, because I just want to make sure that people who are listening know who we're talking to. And we are talking to a former immigration judge, Dana Lee Marks, and also Aureli Hernandez, who is a local DACA recipient. And you wanted to say something, so go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to add to what the judge said, which are great points. There are not enough judges. And also, not everybody who faces deportation will go before a judge. One of the practices that we have sadly seen is that immigration will come after someone and they will use different tactics to get them to sign a voluntary departure. Many times folks don't have an attorney. This happens very quickly by the time that they are apprehended and put before an intimidating situation. And they're asked to sign a document not knowing what it is. And it's actually a document that is giving away their right to see a judge and are immediately deported. In the LA area, in the last Trump administration, we saw folks deported within hours. They were detained in the morning, and by the afternoon, they were over the border. So the other thing to bring up here is that there are many human and civil rights violations that happen when these processes happen. When immigration is out on the street, it's the whole of communities that are at danger. It is not just immigrants. Immigration has operations in neighborhoods, in schools, and that is what is at risk. Really, it's democracy that is at risk, the violation of rights. You know, it's immigrants who also have rights in the U.S., the right to remain silent, the right to not incriminate themselves, and their rights are often violated.
And Aureli is correct in saying that things can sometimes happen extremely quickly. And once someone is outside the United States, there are huge legal barriers to being able to reverse that decision. So generally speaking, people have no recourse when that happens.
Aureli, as you know, the state of California and the city of California, they're sanctuary. It's a sanctuary state and sanctuary city. Do you take no comfort in that?
So it's very, it's a lot of confusion as to what that means. Really, what that means is that resources from the state or from the city can't be used to collaborate. That's what it means. It doesn't mean that immigration will still not be present. There are still officers that represent immigration services in the city and in the county and in the state. That's still a reality. All that means is that resources of the city, I'm assuming you refer to the latest LA City ordinance. The ordinance really means that the city cannot use city resources to collaborate with immigration. But that doesn't prevent immigration from being in the city, right? And so they will still be in the city. They will still be out looking for folks. And so it is a strong statement about our city being a city where folks can be safe, but it still does not prevent immigration operations and immigration enforcement from happening in the city.
All right, Aureli. That's a great point, Aureli. And it also doesn't protect the U.S. citizen spouses and children of individuals who are targeted in these kinds of sweeps. They're not amenable to being put in deportation or removal proceedings, but their family is broken up. It is just as bad as the family separation that occurs at the U.S. border in the past administration when families were separated.
We are wrapping up our discussion about immigration and what might happen when President-elect Trump takes over on January 20th. With us is former federal immigration judge Dana Lee Marks and local DACA recipient Aureli Hernandez, who is with the Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights of Los Angeles. Aureli, Donald Trump has said immigrants coming here are, and this is his quote, poisoning the blood of our country. How does that make you feel?
That makes me feel completely sad because this nation is notoriously seen as a nation that is welcoming to those who seek shelter, who seek refuge. We have seen in so many decades that folks fleeing other nations in turmoil come to the U.S. seeking asylum, seeking refuge for many different causes. And it's really a change in how the U.S. is viewed. And that's not a factual statement. It's not at all. And we look to those who have been great innovators, great scientists, great people that have made this country a better country because of their contributions, and who are immigrants, refugees, and asylum seekers. And I think that folks should look at our communities that are immigrant and see the humanity in them, and see that we are a nation that loves above all, and that hate is not what fuels us. It is everyday people who get up and give public service, do so much for this nation. And that comes from love and from humanity. And I hope that that's how people see immigrants, based on that love and humanity, and not on the horrible things that are said.
Beautiful way to end. Really do appreciate your time. Aureli Hernandez, a DACA recipient, and a former U.S. immigration judge, Danalee Marks. Thank you both for your time today.
Thank you.
Coming up on Monday's Countdown 2024, the world's richest man will be in the White House soon. Nope, we're not talking about Donald Trump. It's Elon Musk, who may play a very important role in the new administration, already is. We take a deep dive into what Musk wants to accomplish as Trump's apparent new BFF. If you missed the show, catch up on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Countdown 2024 and follow the show.